org. Revolution in Egypt, what does it mean for us? A teach-in sponsored by New Socialist Project, Stop the Wars Coalition, Socialist Alternative, Code Pink, Mass Global Action, the United National Anti-War Committee, and the Boston Coalition for Palestinian Rights. Next Thursday, February 17th, at 6:30 p.m. at the Palestinian Cultural Center for Peace, located at 41 Quint Avenue in Alston. Featuring Ashraf Elkerm, an Egyptian medical doctor, Salma Ben Mahmoud, a Tunisian Fulbright student at Clark University, Leila Cable, a Palestinian activist, and Brian Quoba, a world history teacher. Free admission, donations welcome. Next Thursday, 6:30 p.m. at the Palestinian Cultural Center for Peace in Alston. Email EgyptRising@gmail.com for more information. Looks like that's all we have time for. Thank you for joining me on What's Left. I hope you're part of What's Left. And join us again next week for more. The views and opinions expressed on this program have been those of the participants and not necessarily the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. So this is going to end right now, and I don't even know if the human beings are here because the lights are out and things have become very spiritual. So I'm going to guess that they are here and that perhaps they are ready to enlighten and delighten us. So stay tuned for Music for Human Beings coming up in any moment now. This is WMBR Cambridge.
مرحبا. مرحبا في Music for Human. I'm a Dr. Jalis Sakran and I welcome you. It is with no small amount of rustling today that we join you, because of course those of us in the studio are celebrating an ancient ceremonial ritual that occurs every 17 years on the anniversary of the paper accident. So all of us here are wearing these masks, and for the rustling we apologize, but remember it is a spiritual phenomenon. First among those who are so papered is Aurora. Aurora, marhaban.
Namaste, and thank you for having me, especially on this particularly interesting day. And I encourage all of those who are listening to listen to the deep rustling of the paper, to listen to its resonances, to feel the white noise as it soothes you.
Yeah, the white noise is a very soothing thing. It's not clear why, but here we are wearing these masks, some of which are especially crudely constructed. Well, here to discuss that also with us is Zoro, the numerologist. Zoro, marhaban.
Yes, thank you for having me on the show again, Doctor. Of course, it is good, and thank you to all the listeners out there. Yes, I find this celebration, it is quite cathartic to hide and to be seeing but unseen.
It's somewhat disturbing, even this idea that now I close my eyes and I hear a manifest rustling. And with this information, I can identify the locations, the age, the maturity, and the eagerness of everyone in the room.
Yes, but you know, these things can come with practice as well. Even if there is no mask of paper on a man's face, you may sense from his ambiance, his aura, you know?
The beauty of these masks being that the mind is less distracted from the physical and is more able to focus on those little intricate points. And to those of you who are not in the studio and cannot observe us, we are indeed wearing what is it called? Priority mail masks. And this further allows us to realize the true nature of our being. For today, in the physicality, we are, as we are spiritually, merely packages sent through time and space, hopefully to mature by the time we arrive, to be opened at the time of our death, and the contents to be displayed and reused, and then perhaps resent in this sort of reincarnation judgment point of view.
You know, it is interesting. I wonder if we are being too vain to label ourselves priority.
It only really outlines the brevity of our physical lives.
Well, here to discuss the priority of movement is an expert on traveling, Erno the Lost. Erno, marhaban.
Hello, Doctor. Thank you for having me today on this day of rustling.
Erno, by the rustling, I too realize that you too are wearing the ceremonial mask. This is a realization I also have.
Yes, indeed. This is a holiday that I have long celebrated. It is only beneath this mask that I feel truly myself. And I must apologize if my flailing arms are hitting any of my fellow co-hosts, because my mask is of the traditional form and has no eyes. I am totally absorbed in the world of the holiday. I cannot see the external world at all.
Truly a profound sacrifice. I myself, imitating this act of sacrifice, attempted to leave no openings, but unable to function, I was forced to sacrifice one eye, and I tried to do another one, but
yes, I can see in your face, in that eye, there is resignation, defeat.
I cannot, and because I don't have any eye holes.
Yeah, it looks like resignation, but it's just a show.
Of course, as a vocal therapist, instead of sacrificing my eyes, I have indeed sacrificed my ears. And for a short period during the show, I am actually listening in a very muffled way and attempting to interpret the meanings of the sounds that I hear.
It is more challenging.
Mm.
I had a strange experience this week that I would like to share with all of you.
Please, Erno. Erno, share.
Beginning on Monday night, I, after long, long hours in the potion laboratory, a disease came upon me.
Oh, I'm very, very sorry.
Yes, I believe they call it a cold in the parlance of our times. And after taking several potions to relieve myself of the cold, I fell asleep and slept for many hours. But during the night, I awoke in a fear and a terror, and in my terror, I did not believe that I was in my bed. I believed I was in this world, this fantasy world, where there was no system of currency, no money to speak of, no civilization, and I had to form it for myself. I started building houses and growing crops, growing grain and barley, moving on to animals, sheep, lamb, buffalo.
You know, I hear distress in your voice, but I'm thinking that for some men, this is not such a nightmare, but more of a paradise.
Some may think it so, but I analyzed the situation, and I wondered, where would I be without civilization? What would my life be like? And I wonder, if I was thrown in a world where we had nothing, we did not have the radio microphones in front of us, the paper masks for our celebration, the food prepared on our table, would we really survive?
Now, this is a very interesting point, and perhaps I'd like to display a point which I believe very deeply, and perhaps what you missed in your dream, that was a prime opportunity for you to live as a hunter-gatherer, although perhaps you were alone at the time.
I started off alone, yes, but later on other people I knew from my waking life, joined me in this land, which was on an isolated island, and they started also fending for themselves, and we became not only allies, but also opponents, for there were only so many resources in this tiny speck of non-civilization that was allotted to us. And it made me consider my relationships with those around me, my relationships with you, with our listeners, with my superiors and with my inferiors. How do they think of me? if I was gone, would it matter? I don't know.
You know, it is interesting that you say that this piece of no civilization, it was granted to you. So is it that there was a decision, someone in charge had decided to put some number of people together in the wilderness?
There are some who may say that there is an entity out there that decides these things, but I leave that to our listeners. I do not know. All I know is that it was not my decision, yet I ended up in this place and had to make the best of it. Eventually, we built roads, long roads, short roads, between our villages. Our villages became cities, and our cities made war. Yet we had nothing between us. There was no conflict, no reason to fight, yet we fought. And it just, the story of humanity was in this dream I had, and once I awoke from it, I had trouble convincing myself I was not still in it. It was very, very strange, and I'm still very confused about it.
You know, this is very interesting. I think there are many symbolic ways to interpret this dream. I am kind of wondering if it is perhaps influenced by the potion which you had preceding your sleep.
It's quite possible, but the potion was more... It was not, shall we say, something to make you hallucinate, but it does help with coughs from time to time, which was the purpose of my imbibing of it.
Now, I believe the true sadness, the true misery of this dream lies in the potential to build a war-free society, and that perhaps it is inevitable that humanity follows this path in your mind.
Yes, it's strange. And at the beginning, we were very cooperative, trading resources with each other. I would trade my buffalo for cauliflower from my friend's garden, and together we would make a meal. But in the end, when each of us had our own buffalo and our own cauliflower, we just made war for I know not why.
You know, it is interesting. I think it reminds me a little of this phrase you have. It says, a man is not free until he has nothing to lose. So, in a way, your stranded position with nothing, it is more free than when you are forced by this society, by this scarcity, to fight.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I love this image, however, Erno, of the roads. The roads between two villages. These places that exist, whether they are in your mind or in reality. The first roads, they were roads that were created by the feet of thousands of people and thousands of journeys. The footfalls crushing and expanding and engraving a groove across the earth, which is a message to anyone who is flying in a bird or other flying machine that this is a commonly walked path. This is the origin of roads. And I imagine that our listeners at this point, particularly the long-time listeners, may have found that on their phones they have a groove from dialing, because as always, if anyone would like to join in and impose their beliefs on us and on the other listeners, 617-253-8810, and we would love.
Yes, please join us and help us build our spiritual civilization.
You know, it is interesting, I think, this view of the road as a message. You know, it is saying to anyone who happens to see it that that this path is a safe one.
Mm. Let's bring our first caller on. Again, the road is safe. Marhaban, caller.
Hello?
Welcome.
Who is this?
Caller, who are you?
I just got a call on my phone and I answered it and here I am. Who are you?
Here we are, caller.
Here you are. Where am I?
All and everywhere and in the absence of locations.
I'm also very much right here in the basement of Historic Walker Memorial.
I mean, I believe for you, I am in some vibrations in the air. They connect to your brain, and then you can translate. Is this what you mean?
No. I feel like we got off to a bad start. I gotta come clean with you guys. I lied when I called you. I didn't pick up the phone when you were here. I dialed your number. And I was embarrassed about it, and I'm embarrassed now. And I just like to apologize to each one of you.
Caller,
embarrassment is not necessary.
Yeah, really, there is no judgment here. We will think about it, and we'll discuss what we think of you later. But for now,
well, if you guys want any cash for it, or just don't, you know.
Caller, all we wish for is a spiritual connection with you and with another person. This is,
yes, if anybody listening to this program were to judge you, we would judge them harshly, for there is no judgment here.
Could I jump in on that?
Yes, you may also
you
judge.
Okay. What's your favorite curse word or nickname for people you hate?
There are certain people who are, what is this? Driving around. And I don't like when they are yelling on the road.
Me too.
This is the person I hate the most.
Well,
Colin, for me personally, I hate that.
For me personally, there is no hate. There is merely pity sometimes.
Mm. Blah, 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 boring. What about you, Victor Jalas?
Well, Dr. Janice, so for me, myself, it's true. These words that we choose, I like the words of my native tongue, but as Aurora says, I think words are like a road that for thoughts that have been grooved and engraved in the mind, and I try to avoid experiencing that too much. But when I do, I have a very nice armory of words that really no one else around me can appreciate. But I find relief there.
Have you ever been in a physical altercation where you're punched in the chest or kidneys?
Yes, in the solar plexus. Let's bring another voice in to share with us. Again, if anyone would like to call, 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
It concerns me because they know where you are when you're on the road. So I choose to stay off the path because they don't know where you are.
Who are they, caller?
Well, I guess everyone out there, because there are good people and there are ones that you should doubt. As Cartesius said, doubt everything. And when you walk along the road, people see you. And they may not have good intent. So if you're not on the road, you avoid that whole issue. At least from my point of view.
This is true, but you may avoid most things by lack of participation, but at the same time, you will lack participation in all other things.
Well, I'd like to point out that something that I've noticed in the years, that oftentimes those thoughts that you project upon others, the thoughts of mistrust, that people are out to hurt you, when you project those thoughts outwards, those actions are projected back upon yourself. If you treat people as if they are trying to be good and they are trying to do what's good for the world and what's good for themselves, then usually they will be good towards you in return.
That I understand, but for the most part, if you look around you, it seems to be easier or more convenient to doubt people than to trust them.
But it's
the building of trust takes a long time.
But I think this is why we value the trust so much.
And caller, I'd like to take an extension of what Aurora said, because I think that like you are afraid of being hurt by a person that you meet on the road, I'm afraid of being hurt and being alone.
I've traveled down many roads, and believe me, it's a tough world out there, but that's just my take on it. I had to comment on the road taken and just make you aware of the paths along the side of the road that are not on the road. That was it. That was my comment. Thank you, and a pleasure listening as always.
Well, thank you so much for joining our circle.
Thank you, caller, for being with us. Again, if anyone would like to join, it's 617-253-8810. The concept of fear on the road.
On the point of fear, Doctor, I believe the next part of my story can really shed light on it. So, once the Great War was over, we became one civilization, one world, and our cities grew. They grew large. But later, a ship docked at one of our ports, full of what I can only term barbarians, who proceeded to ransack and destroy and pillage everything we had built. And we didn't know what to do. These people, they were evil and we could not trust them. But because of this, an order of knights grew to protect the cities. And we learned to trust them, so I believe the fear of those that hurt us can indeed lead us to those who will be our friends and our allies and our most trusted companions.
This is interesting. I am wondering if perhaps we can bring in some outside interpretation of the dream. Perhaps not.
I mean, for my own part, I think it is a classical arrangement, but it is the old expression, who would guard us from the soldiers? I think our earlier caller may have distrusted the too much influence and power aggregated in a single body. Let's bring another call in. Again, 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Hello there.
Welcome, caller.
How are you all doing in there?
Caller.
You're down there in the big memorial building or something.
Yes, caller. We are only too pleased to be with you.
I tell you something right now. The old golden rule works good for me. If you treat everybody else like you want to be treated, then everybody's happy.
You know, this is a good place to live by, I think, but there is the problem of what if the rest of the world does not agree?
Well, that ain't be the dilemma. And truth be known, that religion has separated us more than brought us together. Now, the Dean of New York University agreed with me personally on that.
Now, Carla, I really like what you're saying about the Golden Rule, and in particular, I believe even if one person follows this rule, it will lead to a cascade of glorious events, of people realizing, oh, the world does work better, oh, I'm so pleased at that stranger was so kind to me, let me pay it forward. And I believe that one person can begin a difference in a localized manner.
I very much admire this belief. There have been long periods in my life where it is so easy to become cynical, to believe that no amount of effort on one's part will ever yield happiness or trust. And I have always, or I should say, I now actively seek this attitude of optimism, not just in life and being optimistic about the universe being benign, but also that others have the capability of being benign.
You know, this is interesting, but I think perhaps from another perspective, a man who is so kind may be inducing happiness into those who do not deserve it, perhaps. He may reinforce these attitudes which are not beneficial to mankind. And so it is not such a clear thing to me that one person's difference is actually, on the whole, a positive one.
Well, I can't argue with that. But there's a lot of people in Boston that are just downright rude. Why? They say, psychologists say, because it's such a rap race, everybody's in competition, that it is now acceptable to be rude in traffic.
This is true, and I must agree there.
Well, y'all have a good night, and I hope you have a very good Chinese New Year.
Well, caller, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you, caller. Thank you for being with us. Zorro, really, the idea of the possibility, this belief that a single person cannot have an impact.
I am simply saying that just to create a little bit of, how you say, happiness, it is not necessarily going to reinforce itself. You may be helping some stranger, but maybe perhaps the stranger is thinking that he can get ahead without being nice himself. You know what I mean? So it builds upon itself and perhaps is not as good of a thing as it seems on the surface.
I'd like to suggest perhaps that in most cases, being kind to someone who is perhaps less than kind may not necessarily lead to a negative effect. I can see how it may reinforce negative actions, but being kind to someone is not the same as laying back and allowing them to do nasty things to you. That perhaps, even if the effect is not immediate, that these people who are unkind will look back and think, what I did was wrong, and on some emotional level, they will realize, eventually, that there is another way to live. And I believe that in general, if we think about all of these possibilities, there is a net positive. And that perhaps even smiling at people in the street can build up such a beautiful impact. I mean, when someone smiles at you randomly in the street, it does brighten up your day. It is a form of charity, and it's a beautiful act.
But on the other side of the coin, if your policy is constantly to turn the other cheek, then it is very difficult to relay your philosophy.
But there is a large difference between turning the other cheek and treating others as you would like to be treated. If someone punches you in the face, you do not smile at them and say, "Try again." That is not necessarily the same philosophy.
Yeah, that is a philosophy, but another philosophy which shares this attitude of optimism is to be strong, to be nice, but to also be fair. So if one were to strike you, to simply move to the next person, to turn the other cheek to all of humanity, but not to the individual.
Perhaps another way to think of it is that in many cases an act of kindness will cause immediate embarrassment to the other party, but will in the future lead to their betterment.
I'm wondering perhaps if there is a lesson with the conclusion of the dream.
Well, the dream, after the barbarians left and the knights helped us rebuild, there isn't really an ending, I'm sorry to say. The knights wandered off into the distance, and I woke up after I had fallen on the floor. And I proceeded to take more of my cough potion and slept the rest of the night, so maybe it is for us here on this radio show to fill in the end. How would you end the story? Zorro, would you have traded all of your cauliflower for another person's sheep, or perhaps multiple sheep?
I am not certain. I mean, there are different power structures which perhaps your civilization could culminate with. I was wondering if it would become of kings or of a democracy, or if perhaps it is fated to anarchy.
Strangely enough, there was never any mention of a form of government. It was all involving interactions between neighbors. And I just wonder, what type of people would we be? Would we be the ones that hoard the grain, hoard the bricks? Or would we collaborate with our neighbors and everyone would be able to eat and build?
So in your dream, it was lawless.
I think
there were unspoken laws.
I think, as Erdnall points out, it was not an important point that indeed the structures that formed out of necessity.
I'd like to believe that perhaps your dream ended in a circle. That after this plight, when the entire civilization was ruined, that perhaps you were at the beginning again, needing to build from scratch.
Yes, as I mentioned, I am still very confused. The one thing I do know is that I will always check the expiration date on the cough syrup I use.
Now, I find it very interesting that your dream seems to follow our outline, so to speak, for humanity, especially with this age of Aquarius, with all of humankind becoming peaceful and more elevated and perhaps in harmony with one another, and that this ends with an outside invasion. It's an interesting thought.
You speak of extraterrestrials, Aurora.
Perhaps.
You know, I've heard tales perhaps that the enemy may not come from the outside of the planet, but there might be some kind of a intrusion from within.
Intraterrestrials, you say, Zorro?
Something like this, although the term is not familiar to me.
Perhaps we will become invaders.
Perhaps we already are.
Terrestrials?
Biblical invaders. Do you recall their names? It was Gog and Magog. Also, they were not from outside of the earth, but from within, two massive civilizations.
I must say, I'm not familiar.
It's simply a matter of debate.
I am also not familiar with the names. I do know of the Balrog, who also came from the center of the earth.
I think these are unrelated terms.
I do not see why they can't be related.
Yeah, they might be, but they are not.
I've been thinking often this week about the elements and how we are creatures of Earth, born of Earth, growing our food out of Earth, And perhaps if there were creatures of fire, of air, and water, perhaps fish, how well we would be able to understand them and what it means for us to be creatures of earth. And I wonder if any of my co-hosts have any ideas on that.
Well, I think perhaps that the perspective could be reversed. You may say that the earth is made of the creatures on it. After we die, we go back to the earth, you say, but perhaps the earth, it is absorbing us. And it is really made with a conglomeration of many of the living beings which are upon it.
Well, would that not still make us creatures of Earth?
I mean to say that the Earth is of us.
The Earth is a planet of creatures.
Yes.
And we are creatures of Earth.
Right. In a way, I think that because we are more independent entities, that our souls, they seem to be in a state of disconnection, and we strive against this. I think it is fair to say that when they come back together, that is the result. It is not the source.
Yeah, I'm not sure this is true, really, Zoro. I believe that returning to Erdno's hallucinated vision, that there is always the issue one may hoard against lack of mercy, against a drought, against a time of scarcity. But ultimately, if the earth were to cease producing fruit, if there was a cessation of nurture from the earth from which we came, we would perish very quickly. Nothing could save us.
That is quite frightening.
But it is reality. And obviously, If we focused on this possibility, on the possibility of dying, of the possibility of being unable to sustain ourselves in this way, we would perish from the fear of it alone. Hence, the two civilizations, the one which is starving, may be supported by the one which is enjoying plenty, and this is a simple form of hoarding. But once again, if anyone would like to join in, 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban. Welcome back.
I heard somewhere that magnesium was a very powerful diuretic, and also on its way out that we had eaten most of it from nuts. And I was wondering if you had any, and what do you think about it? And also phosphorus. Mark.
Well, magnesium is an interesting substance that we've discussed before, because it is known to have an effect on the brain, that these dreams or visions will be more vivid if a substantial quantity of magnesium is consumed, and appears in many, many fruits and nut seeds.
So perhaps pumpkins. In a way it connects us with a spiritual plane.
Yeah, perhaps magnesium is a very, very interesting substance in this way.
Now, caller, what brings magnesium in particular to your mind?
I have a really big headache right now, and I was just wondering why, God. And I thought maybe magnesium.
Now, where is the headache?
It's in my head.
What region? Or all of them?
The whole thing is that mostly like in the skull, like on top of the brain, but like in the brain, and then also outside of it.
Why don't we bring in a second caller to hopefully reduce that headache? Caller 2, marhaban.
Yes, good evening. Thanks for taking my call. I just have a quick comment. I've been switching around the channels looking for music because I love 88.1. This is a wonderful show. I really enjoy it.
Thank you.
Never heard it before, and I just wanted to call to say thanks. Anything that it expands the mind or gets people out of the physical or start thinking of something else, I think is wonderful.
Thank you so much for that.
Yes. You're welcome. I really appreciate it. It's a great conversation, and I will continue to listen. You guys have a good evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Connor.
Yeah. Right, bye-bye.
Thank you, caller. I rustle my bag to you.
Now, caller one, back to your headache. Is it pulsating or constant?
It's constant. It sort of feels like a screwdriver, I would say.
One thing I am told may help you is to remember to relax your jaw. There are a lot of tensions can build up in these muscles.
Well, I was also wondering if it maybe had to do with my diet, because I've eaten basically only beans for months.
It is possible. Sometimes these two things can be related. If you have too much to drink, your muscles may lock up.
Mm-hmm. Well, caller, with this particular type of headache, I'd like you to try to lay back and pretend you are floating freely in the ocean and allow yourself to hear in your mind the waves of the ocean, to feel the breeze on your face, and to relax and to wash your mind away. And with the water, with the waves, to feel your headache slowly ebb away.
Ow. It's so much better. No, I think there's no change, but maybe if I play that back a lot while I'm sleeping, it'll help.
Yes, you'd have to do it while you're probably off of the phone, over a period of maybe 10 minutes, half an hour.
But really, who has that kind of time nowadays?
Yes, this is true. So much time we spend to communicate and to have this culture of ours, there is too much upkeep, I think, these days. I sort of wish that it was easier for a man to be in seclusion, should he desire.
Well, in order to maintain a good mind-body balance, one must take time away. And to concentrate on those things.
You're right. But what else? I mean, all right. I'm gonna go grab some pizza.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yes. Thank you so much, caller, for being with us. Why don't we bring another voice in? Again, if you'd like to join, 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Hello.
Welcome, caller.
I'd like to address the caller just left the line about his headache. I don't want to be an alarmist, and I'm not a doctor or anything, of course, but a severe headache like that, maybe should be checked out by a medical specialist.
Absolutely.
I'm sure it's nothing. I'm sure it's probably just stress or tension or something, but it's always good to play it safe.
No, I very much agree with that caller, and I think that's a great point to bring up. We are not, although each of us have our expertise, certainly we would not claim to be able to offer reliable medical advice.
Because I heard of remember the famous 80s pop singer Laura Branigan?
Well,
she had a hit with Gloria back in the 80s.
Yes. Yes, caller.
Well, she had she passed away a few years ago at a young age, age 47. She had a headache for 3 weeks, and she wouldn't go to a doctor, her brother said. And she passed away one night in her sleep of a brain aneurysm.
Oh, that is quite disturbing. I'm very sorry.
Yeah, I really liked Laura Branigan. She was a very attractive woman, very, very good voice. She was making a comeback, too, when she passed away, but she had a headache for 3 weeks. And I don't know why she didn't go to a doctor, her brother said, but she just didn't go.
It's amazing because there are a number of ways that death can strike at any time. An aneurysm is one, but there is also an embolism or an infarction, and these things can strike extremely quickly. It is useless, of course, to constantly be frightened of these things because they are, it is possible, so imminent. But at the same time, I think it is worth meditating on the life that we have led up to this point as regularly as possible.
Well, Sigmund Freud, he was considered the father of modern psychoanalysis. One of his theories, I believe, reading once years ago, was that the primordial fear in every human being's soul and mind is the fear of death. If one can conquer the fear of death, the fear of not being, one can be free in life to really live and be happy. I haven't conquered that yet totally, but I guess it entails the fear, that conquering the fear of death entails possibly the belief in an afterworld, a spirit world, the other world. And so if you can conquer that primordial ancient fear. I think it's in most creatures and mammals, and every creature on this planet has instinct for survival.
No, absolutely. I agree with that very much. I'm not sure that a belief in the afterlife is even sufficient, because no matter how sincere the belief, there will always be doubt. There is an ancient Arabic parable about a man in the street is... In the forest has an almond in its shell, and he wishes to eat it, so he strikes it with a stone. The almond flies away, and the man remarks, O creation, all things fear death, including almonds. And I always thought this is a symbolic thing. This is amazing, because you know, how does one interpret the behavior of things outside?
There is, yes,
but simultaneously, I really believe that the almond did not fear, and that it is simply a projection.
Yes, I may say, I think that I take a little bit of the opposite point of view. You say perhaps that a belief in the afterlife is a good step in the direction, and the doctor has suggested that it is perhaps enough, but I am wondering if to give in to uncertainty and to admit your own ignorance is not in a way more of a satisfaction. You can sort of achieve some kind of equilibrium in this instance. If you know that you do not know, then you may be comfortable, I think.
Connor,
I'll bring up an example which happened in the news, world situation the past few weeks in Egypt. Where hundreds of thousands of protesters protested mostly nonviolently to rid themselves of a terrible dictator, Mubarak, who just resigned today, and he finally resigned after much pressure. But these protesters conquered the fear of death, many of them, because some of the pro-Mubarak people last week came in a couple of days and caused trouble, spread violence among the crowd, and hurt a lot of people. But these other protesters kept coming, anti-Mubarak. They conquered their fear of death, look what they got freedom.
Caller, I wonder if you have early memories of life.
I don't really. I don't remember anything past before maybe 5 years old or 6 years old.
So one of the things that made that really reduced my panic over death, because when I really realized that I would die at an early age, I was gripped by fear. And it was only when I realized that the fear was such a strong memory, and I had no memories of being afraid or in any sort of pain before my birth. This led me to believe that indeed I would experience no pain or fear after my death if I simply ceased to exist. And this was a thing that actually brought me comfort. So even in the absence of a belief in some spiritual afterlife, which is obviously a personal choice, there may be comfort in this idea.
Well, I believe scientifically that there probably is an afterlife, because people have actually died on the operating table with heart surgery, but to be legally dead for 25 minutes while they would be revived, and they were they had their eyes closed, of course, because they were unconscious. but they describe hovering above the operating table and watching the surgeon try to revive them, and then they would meet most of the stories talk about a long time of light they see with a man in white, or being some kind of being with white robes on, with white light around him, and the being asks, "Do you want to come to the next world? Do you want to go back to your body and finish your life here?" And some people choose to go to the next world. Other people choose to stay here to finish unfinished business. So I figure, how could they describe the scene of the surgeons reviving them if they were dead and there was no afterlife? But apparently, what seems to be logical from that experience is that there is a consciousness that lives on.
Indeed, it is quite compelling evidence.
Well, I mean, it is an interesting fact, but caller, I think that the skeptic would ask, just as I am able to hear the movement of every person in the room due to the rustling of the mask, perhaps even the person who is dying on the operating table may be so aware. Why don't we bring a second caller on the line?
Sure.
Again, 617-253-8810. We're just running out of time.
I'll hang up now, but thanks for taking my phone call.
Thank you for being with us, caller.
I really enjoy your show. It's really very enlightening to the soul to hear your takes on the spirit, you know.
Caller, it is you that enlightens us. Thank you, caller.
Thank you.
And is there a new caller with us?
Yes, thank you so much for taking my call, and I wanted to, you know, thank you for your show. It's very refreshing to have something different on the radio, and I have my son actually listen to the show, too. It's absolutely wonderful, but I wanted to reach out to the caller about the headache, and I do come from a medical background, and you should definitely drink some water, a nice tall glass of water every hour, maybe some chamomile tea, maybe some almond tea, something soothing, and increases fluids. That's probably part of the reason why he may have the headache.
Yes, and indeed, I think he mentioned the magnesium is a diuretic and something like this, so maybe that is part of the problem.
That may be part of the problem, and he should be seen, obviously, by a physician or a care provider of his choice. But again, I really wanted to express my thanks. Please continue what you do and stay in the light, and you definitely help us with those kinds of things as well, and I can't thank you enough.
Well,
have a wonderful evening.
Thank you so much for your input and for your lovely words.
Caller, thank you so much. It is always wonderful. I think it warms all of us to know that there are people listening out there and responding to us.
Yes, I think that we cannot thank them enough. There have been many many callers today that are grateful, but I want all of the listeners to know that we are really run by you, and that without you, it is not a show, it is not worth anything. So thank you very much.
Indeed, it is true, and unfortunately, we are running so close to time. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. Thanks to the callers. Thanks to Aurora.
Namaste.
Thanks to Zorro.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you, listeners.
Thanks also to Erno.
Doctor, on my hallucinated island, I would give you all of my cauliflower. Thank you.
Thanks to the many callers and the many listeners, and apologies to those that we were unable to get to tonight. I'm Dr. Jalis Sakran, here on Music for Human, which is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you. We are here every Friday night at 7 p.m. Stay tuned next for Radio Ninja Masan.
points for safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
For the best in African music, tune into Africa Kabisa, Sundays 4 to 6 p.m. You'll hear the sounds of Suku, Stambolo, Makossa, Coupe de Calais, Kwaito, High Life, and more. We bring all the sounds of Africa to you, from classics from the golden age of Rumba to the latest dance club favorites, with everything from Afrobeat to Ziglibiti. Plus interviews, immigration and health information, ticket giveaways, and a complete calendar of local African events. That's Africa Kabisa, Sundays 4 to 6 p.m. on 88.1 FM, WMBR, Cambridge.